to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity. The last 20 years, we've been championing the cause of integrative medicine for cancer through direct support or by educating those with cancer about the resources available to help themselves with integrative medicine. A highlight in recent years has been the opportunity to present a new theory of cancer to the world. The cell suppression theory is the brainchild of Mark Linton, a non-scientist cancer patient who devoted nearly 8 years to pursuing a new understanding of cancer. Since the launch of the theory, Mark has continued to invest his time and energy in the field and has now come up with a fresh understanding of prostate cancer and why a different set of rules seem to apply in that particular cancer. This is a very important subject that I naturally want to find out more about. Hi Mark, Happy New Year. Brilliant to have you back on the show.
Brilliant to be here. Thank you, Robin. Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
So, hard to believe, but it's pretty much 3 years now since we helped you to launch your revolutionary cell suppression theory of cancer into the wild. Since then, you've accrued considerable support for your thinking, and you've had many incredible opportunities to share your ideas with the public, with scientists, with professionals. I just wanted to mention one scientist before we get our teeth into the main topic for the show, the topic being prostate cancer. But you've recently been in touch with Dr. Robert Navio, someone whose groundbreaking scientific ideas in the field of infection were so central to your own exploration of cancer mechanisms. I wonder if you start off by telling us a little about the importance of his work and about your recent contacts with him.
Yeah, thank you. That was really interesting and very humbling for me. I sometimes feel like I'm living in a movie when I'm in contact with leading scientists such as Dr. Robert Navio. But I actually, when I originally contacted him, I mentioned about the prostate cancer interpretation I had, and he responded and got back in touch with me, purchased my book, and then immediately wanted to speak to me. So that was really, really nice. But just to prelude that, he is quite pivotal in what he's produced, because he's produced something called the cell danger response model. And this is an attempt to describe the underpinning format that cells go through when they experience danger in any of any kind. So toxins, physical damage, infection. Or the model he puts forward is that cells generally go through a process of defending the cell, eliminating the pathogen, reducing the threat from the toxin, and then cell repair cycle, and then return back to homeostasis. So in Robert Navio's model, he talks about three stages. So he talks about CDR1, which is the cell danger response one phase. And that's the phase where, say, for example, an infection enters the cell. This cell gets alerted and it increases inflammation and various signaling pathways that alert the immune system into action. The idea here being that you would get benefit from the immune system in terms of aiding the removal of the pathogen. Once the pathogen is eliminated, you would then have the cell revert to the second phase, which is a cell repair phase. In both these phases, you have a switch to the backup energy system, because that aids the inflammation, drawing the immune system in to aid with the repair process. But once you remove the pathogen, it moves from CDR1 to CDR2, cell danger response 2, which is to repair the damage that's been caused. And then once that process has finished, it leads on to this CDR3, which is cell danger response 3, which is bringing the cells or the tissue back to homeostasis. So healing is complete. So it's a cycle. You can't move through each of the cycles until the first cycle, the second cycle has been completed. So that's really important for understanding disease in general, because the thing that underpins the cell danger response is inflammation, essentially. And what we see time and time again is that inflammation is seen as the underlying mechanism that seems to drive all disease. And that makes sense when you look at the cell danger response model, because it's describing the process of why inflammation occurs and what the signaling process is within the cell danger response model of that inflammation, what it does. So like I say, just to quickly summarize, CDR1 is a transition period aimed at alerting the immune system and eliminating pathogens or toxins. Then you have CDR2, which enables repair of the cells once you've eliminated those threats. And then CDR3 enables the cell to return to homeostasis. And that pretty much underpins most disease, including cancer. So what I found with his work is that he describes this fantastic transition of how mitochondria operate within the cell to mediate this cell danger response model. And that fits into my model of cancer very, very nicely. And that is that when, say, an infection enters the cell, mitochondria, they intentionally suppress OxPhos. So this is the pathway within them, which is, you could say, the primary pathway, energy pathway that cells use. But what's missing in a lot of the medical literature in relation to cancer is that there's no real mention of this process. And this, for me, is the fundamental difference between many of the other theories that are trying to say what cancer is and what my theory set highlights this new mechanism that I'm pointing out. So, for instance, very quickly, with the metabolic theory will say that the reason for the energy shift we see in cancer, which is from energy produced by mitochondria to energy produced in the cytosol through glycolysis, so you're using the backup energy system, that occurs because mitochondria are damaged. That's what the metabolic theory says. It appears as though mitochondria are no longer working. So the assumption is that they're damaged. But what Dr. Navio is saying, and what I'm saying, is that there's a suppressive mechanism going on. They don't actually appear to be damaged because they can be reinstigated to produce energy. And Robert Navio's model really nicely suggests that actually mitochondria might not be damaged. What's happening is that, and what I'm saying is, during an infectious process, the cell realizes the threat. And so mitochondria intentionally suppress the OxPhos pathway, the energy pathway, the primary pathway. That forces the cell to rely on glycolysis to produce the energy to sustain cell functions. But that release allows mitochondria then to use the oxygen that's coming into the cell that they would normally use to create energy, to use that oxygen to repurpose it and target the pathogen, generating reactive oxygen species. And we see this in cancer. But what Robert Navi describes here with this cell danger response model is just a beautiful explanation as to why mitochondria might be acting differently, and offers a different explanation for the Warburg effect in cancer, which is pivotal to how I explain the disease through my theory.
Amazing. So anyway, you got yourself a supporter there, a very high profile one, I think, which is fantastic for you. I can see when you're putting tentatively a new theory of cancer, which is a major ordeal.
It was very nice to speak to him as well. We had a good hour and a half discussion, and he was very, very complimentary. He did say my biological instincts are up there with a lot of his colleagues, if not better than some of his colleagues. So that's nice to hear. And he mentioned that I've achieved something that a lot of scientists are still struggling to achieve and probably haven't or won't achieve just yet without the funding that they also have. So that's an incredible compliment. And he also said that he would like to continue staying in touch and bounce ideas off each other, which, you know, for me, it's a dream come true.
Awesome. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, so today's show is not to go over your theory from scratch. We don't even have the time, of course, to do justice to it. And furthermore, listeners, if you're interested and you want to hear Mark's theory teased apart in detail, well, we actually recorded 6 consecutive shows, and you can find those by going to yestolife.org.uk, clicking the link to the Yes to Life show that's near the top of the homepage. And when you get there, search for Mark Linton in the show guest search box. So not content with a massive achievement of delivering a completely new perspective on cancer, an immense contribution to the field that I'm confident is going to benefit people with cancer significantly in time to come, you've now come up with another blockbuster proposition that builds further on your theory and adds even more credibility to it. So prostate cancer is a bit of a Cinderella story, in as much as it's a highly inconvenient form of cancer that's got this tendency to flout any theory that anyone comes up with. So the general response seems to be just ignore it and hope nobody notices. And this is all despite it being the most common form of cancer in men. So I think up until recently, you were in much the same boat, as you weren't able to provide any reasoned explanation for its behavior either. But now you're able to explain that prostate cancer is not something that needs its own separate theory, but actually operates within the logical framework that you propose for cancer as a whole. The only difference being its starting point. So listen up, men. Mark may be able to help you enormously with his ideas. So let's begin at the beginning. Why and how does prostate cancer differ from other types?
Okay, so this is the really important bit. And to preface this again, I need to really discuss the metabolic theory briefly. So most cancers exhibit the Warburg effect. So this is the process by which you have, if you want to simplify it, two energy systems within the cell. The primary energy system, which is OxPhos, mitochondria basically use oxygen to produce energy. And in the cytosol of the cell, outside of mitochondria, you have glycolysis, which is the backup energy system, which produces lactic acid when used. It's the fermentation of glucose, so you don't need oxygen. So most cancers revert to this backup energy system of glycolysis. So they're fermenting glucose. They don't need oxygen to do so, and they're creating lots of lactic acid. The thought process is, like I've just described, mitochondria are defective, which forces this switch in energy to occur. The cell's trying to survive, so it needs energy from somewhere. So it uses the backup energy system because the mitochondria are damaged. So this is known as the Warburg effect, because Otto Warburg in the 1920s discovered this process by which, even though oxygen is present, the cancer cells are using the backup energy system when they should be using the OxPhos mitochondrial primary energy system to use the oxygen to convert to energy. So that suggested that it was defective. Now, this Warburg effect occurs in virtually all cancers. In fact, it also occurs in prostate cancer, but here's the caveat. The Warburg effect doesn't occur in prostate cancer at the initial stages. It only occurs at very late stage, the metastatic stage. So the metabolic theory is saying that the Warburg effect is the cause of cancer. And the reason for the cause of cancer, or the Warburg effect being triggered in most of the other cancers, is because mitochondria are damaged and dysfunctional. But prostate cancer is the outlier, because it's actually using fatty acid oxidation, and glycolysis is downregulated, OxPhos is upregulated. So in prostate cancer, actually active mitochondria are generating cancer, not glycolysis, so not the Warburg effect. So that suggests that actually there's a disparity here, that mitochondria themselves aren't damaged. You know, they're part of the process. So if you tried to apply the same sort of treatment that you would do for other cancers that have a Warburg effect essentially in motion, which is to starve the cancer of glucose as one of the primary, you know, used to a ketogenic diet, you're likely not to get a benefit in early stage prostate cancer, because that type of cancer is not highly glycolytic. That's the reason why it doesn't show up on a PET scan in early stage prostate cancer. So this highlights as a completely different mechanism going on.
Interesting.
And, you know, pulls into question the metabolic theory, the suggestion that mitochondria are damaged, because if there's a mechanism that you can describe in prostate cancer that explains prostate cancer, that might also transpire to the same similar mechanism in all the other cancers as well.
So just to make the point here, I mean, you've identified the metabolic theory as being the most accurate one in common use and understanding. And also, you've identified the fact that it is, of course, bringing immense benefit to lots of people.
Yes.
So it's a very useful theory, and it points to the fact that it's much nearer the mark than other theories. The fact it's able to help the amount that it is.
Yeah, I think it's important just to make a quick distinction. The Warburg effect is key for me and to understanding the cause of cancer. But really, we should be talking about not specifically the Warburg effect, but it's abnormal metabolism. So what's happening in prostate cancer is abnormal metabolism. And generally, the abnormal metabolism of all the other cancers can be described by the Warburg effect. It's just that prostate cancer, and there's one or two other cancers as well that we can talk about another time, they also have slightly different metabolism. So the key is to identify that there's abnormal metabolism going on. And when you look at it from that perspective, the other explanation that I'm about to give can explain why it's all context dependent, why there's a slight difference.
Right. So it's what's different here is kind of the starting point from which things are going wrong. It's starting at a different place. And hence the progress is different and needs maybe a different understanding and different response.
Absolutely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
They're very useful in theoretical terms, these kind of red flag things. There's this tendency to ignore them. You know, other examples would be, well, they found cancers with no genetic defects, and yet they still hang on to the genetic theory. I mean, there's too big a difference there between those two to bring them together. And again, with the metabolic theory, the fact that you have a cancer in which the mitochondria are clearly working full tilt, that also is a major red flag, which says, well, okay, good as the theory is, there's more to understand here. We should be most interested, if you like, in this difference. It's a key place for learning, isn't it? And, you know, I would liken it to the fact that cancer treatment for years, oncologists have ignored the outliers in cancer, you know, the people who have remarkable recoveries, they're called spontaneous remissions, put in a box and ignored. Whereas actually recently, people have started to research spontaneous remissions and come up with some remarkable understandings about cancer from the recovery of these outliers. So, yeah, that seems to be what you're involved in here. You're looking at the place where your theory was difficult to apply, and saying, well, you know, what's going on here? You know, is there something to understand?
Absolutely. It's really important to look at the outliers, like you say. And I did ignore prostate cancer for a while, just because you want to address the most common defects, because it affects the most people. But then you find out that prostate cancer is actually the leading cancer in men by a large margin. So it's something really important to look at, but is often, like you say, dismissed. So yes, this allows us to really try and explain the disease in more fully, you could say. And when you do explain one of those outliers, yeah, it really does emphasize the importance of a particular theory, or the theory that can explain that. So
just to go on to your light bulb moment regarding your theory, the cell suppression theory and prostate cancer. So you're now able to explain how your existing theory, not modified in any way, as you originally put it out, can actually explain the mechanisms of PC and could therefore be a doorway to more effective treatment. So tell us more.
Yeah, so basically, for anyone who's new to the theory, for me, the key to understanding cancer is the Warburg effect. So the metabolic theory says that defective mitochondria triggers this shift to the Warburg effect. And when we talked about Dr. Robert Navio's cell danger response earlier, I mentioned about infection invading the cell and mitochondria respond by suppressing themselves, which causes this shift into glycolysis, the Warburg effect. And that's because mitochondria are being used to use the oxygen to target the pathogen. So my theory is predicated on the idea that the Warburg effect is an anti-infection response. This is well known within the medical literature. So an infection comes in, we have this metabolic shift, and that's designed to go through this cell danger response process and eliminate the pathogen, repair the cell, what have you. So you, one could argue initially that my theory doesn't fit into the remit of prostate cancer, because my theory relies on the fact that when an infection occurs, the Warburg effect is triggered. However, the difference with prostate cancer is all based on the baseline metabolism that currently occurs. So most cells' baseline metabolism is mitochondria producing most of the energy, and then the backup energy system of glycolysis kicks in when needed. It's very different with healthy prostate metabolism. This is the key to understand. Prostate cells are operating on a different level because they're producing the seminal fluid for reproduction. So in order to do that, the TCA cycle within mitochondria, which is a cycle where different intermediates are converted and oxidized, and that conversion produces different metabolites that are used for different processes in the cell, but also produces electrons and protons for the electron transport chain in mitochondria, which then generates energy. So that cycle is a full cycle. There's a number of different changes that occur. So for instance, glucose will be converted into pyruvate, then acetyl-CoA, and they will enter into the cycle and hit pretty much the first stage of the cycle, which is citrate production. And then it will go on, and citrate will be converted into isocitrate and various other compounds within that cycle, and it will go round and round and round. However, with healthy prostate cells, that cycle is truncated at citrate. So it's essentially blocked at citrate. And that citrate is being expelled out of the cell in order to create seminal fluid for the healthy functioning of the prostate. So we already have a baseline metabolism, which is very different. Now, what's happening is zinc is being imported into the cell. That blocks aconitase, which is an enzyme that would convert citrate into the next step of the cycle. So that's blocked. So that then allows citrate to be produced. That means that OxPhos or mitochondria aren't producing energy. So the OxPhos system that we're talking about earlier isn't producing energy in mitochondria. So glycolysis is upregulated to accommodate for that. And we have fatty acid oxidation. Fat is essentially being used, transported into mitochondria through acetyl-CoA, and that's producing the citrate, which then allows the citrate to be exported. So it's the fatty acid oxidation which is occurring that's enabling the production of the seminal fluid. And because mitochondria aren't producing energy using oxygen, glycolysis is upregulated. So effectively what you've got is that the baseline prostate healthy cells are actually almost in a Warburg-like state. They're relying on glycolysis rather than mitochondrial oxphos to produce energy. And this is all because the TCA cycle is blocked at citrate and citrate has been exported. And this is the perfect healthy baseline level of respiration.
Very different, yeah.
So then we switch to prostate cancer. So a lot of people gloss over the fact that prostate cells are operating abnormally in this or in a different way to most cells, but that's key. But then when we look at prostate cancer, what we notice is that they have a high level of zinc, and it's the zinc level that's key. In prostate cancer, the zinc level drops, glycolysis drops, and oxphos is reignited. The TCA cycle is able to continue fully and complete, and that ignites mitochondria. So now we have oxygen coming to the cell, and mitochondria seem to be producing energy. And fatty acid oxidation, so it is occurring to produce the energy for the cell rather than glycolysis. So we don't have the Warburg effect. We actually, rather than glucose fueling the disease and mitochondria being suppressed, we have mitochondria being activated, fat essentially being oxidized and used for ATP, and glycolysis is being reduced, which is the opposite what we see in the Warburg effect.
It is the opposite, isn't it? Amazing, yes.
So then that's as far as really anyone has got with any other particular theory, because the assumption has always been, which is the distinction I'm always making with my theory, is that I'm saying that actually these cells are being suppressed and they're trying to do their best to get rid of that suppression. Most of the other theories are saying that cancer is a form of malfunction of the cell. So the assumption is, because zinc is now dropped, that those prostate cells are malfunctioning for whatever reason. We don't know what that reason is, but they're malfunctioning. So zinc is being dropped. That's an error. Because zinc is being dropped, you have this metabolic shift occurring, and then you have cancer. But because it doesn't fit with the normal model that everyone is used to, it's not really explained. But because we're looking at it from this perspective of the cell is malfunctioning, the conclusion or the solution is thought to be, well, why don't we just increase zinc? Because the drop in zinc seems to be the main issue. So if we increase zinc, then we should force the cell to revert back to its old way of behaving. However, there's a lot of conflicting evidence that that's actually not beneficial, especially using high-dose zinc. Low-dose zinc seems to be quite beneficial. So at this point, everyone's thinking, how we're looking at this, there's no resolution. There's no full explanation as to why this is occurring. It is occurring. So what we're assuming that the cell has gone wrong. So therefore, we must try and force the cell to revert back to how it was before. But that isn't actually providing the solution we are expecting. So this is where I've been looking at relooking at prostate cancer and thinking, okay, what is going on here? And the key for me is, why is zinc being reduced? Not just that it's being reduced, therefore it must be an error. Let's imagine that it's not an error, as I'm saying with all the other cancers that are out there, that their shift in metabolism isn't an error, it's an intentional shift. So I'm suggesting, well, is zinc an intentional shift? So whilst I'm thinking about this, I'm also thinking about the process of iron sequestration. So whenever you have inflammation of like an acute infection of any kind or any inflammation, what the body does is it pulls all the iron away, it stores it away so that the pathogens cannot get access to the iron, because it knows that iron is an essential a nutrient for the pathogens. It's like rocket fuel for them. They need it to grow. So the body is very, very intelligent when it comes to infection. We've evolved with infections for millions and millions of years. So the body is very intelligent. It knows that iron is a key compound which will increase this infectious process. So it restricts the iron, and it's known as anemia of inflammation. So the body restricts iron for that purpose of not allowing the infection to get access to it. And I was thinking, well, is that the similar process with zinc? And lo and behold, when you then start looking into the medical literature, zinc is required by these pathogens too. And what cells do when there is an infection, you see a drop in zinc. So this has nothing to do with cancer now. When you start looking at it from an infectious perspective, when infection occurs, you have this shift where zinc is restricted on purpose.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now we have this mechanism whereby when you apply my theory to the prostate cancer, what could potentially be happening is that if there's an infection in the prostate, immediately you have this drop in zinc, because that's the natural reaction to an infection, is to sequester the zinc away so the infection doesn't get, the pathogen doesn't get access to the zinc. So now you have this explanation as to why zinc is dropping, is dropped to the cell. But this is further bolstered by the cell danger response model. Because what happens is when zinc is reduced, the cell needs to defend itself. And one of the main ways the cell defends itself is by allowing the mitochondria to become active and use the oxygen that is being absorbed into the cell to target the pathogen by producing reactive oxygen species. So effectively what you have with an infection, the infection comes into the prostate, those prostate cells are alerted, mitochondria are alerted. Mitochondria are not currently active because zinc, high level of zinc, is blocking the TCA cycle, preventing them from being active. But the mitochondria turn around and the mode of action is we need to become active again. The way we become active is we block the zinc, that blocks the pathogens from getting access to the zinc. It reignites the mitochondria so the mitochondria can then use the oxygen to target the pathogen. Now, the prostate tissue is highly lipophilic, so it's highly fat consistent, and what you already have is fatty acid oxidation is in operation. So a quick switch in reigniting the TCA cycle and the fact that fatty acid oxidation is already active, that can then be used to produce the ATP energy. So there doesn't appear to, it may be because fatty acid oxidation is already active, there's no need to switch to this Warburg metabolism because it's already in action. And then that allows mitochondria to, you know, upregulate themselves and use the oxygen to defend the prostate cells. So the whole process can be seen as this anti-infection response again, although it's not a Warburg metabolism that's occurring. It's very similar in the fact that mitochondria are now capable of using the oxygen because the TCA cycle is now being fully operational, it's now re-engaging. But just the fact that fatty acid oxidation is already active may be the reason why we don't see this reliance on the Warburg effect. Because in normal tissue, fatty acid oxidation isn't operational to the same degree. And clearly in prostate cancer, while the tissue is hypoxic, there is clearly enough oxygen available for fatty acid oxidation to occur. And the way that I would explain the Warburg effect occurs in late stage prostate cancer is that over time, when we see the slow growth of the tumor, we get a further reduction in oxygen, so a greater hypoxia in the environment. And that then forces a switch to glycolysis, which is the energy process where the cell doesn't require oxygen. So that would then stunt the ability of fatty acid oxidation to occur or reduce it, which would force this reliance on glycolysis. And that's why we have glycolysis in a later stage in prostate cancer.
Fascinating. I mean, does this thing happens when something happens that people don't understand and they immediately think, oh, the body's gone wrong. You know, it's made a mistake. And, you know, the evidence for our body not going wrong, not making mistakes and actually continually doing its very best to keep us well and whole is overwhelming. And it's a stupid assumption to make. It's just kind of the arrogance of science as well. We know better than the body does in how to put things right. And actually, we don't even understand the body. It's so complex and sophisticated. So reinterpreting an activity of the cell as being for our benefit and well calculated is almost a safer bet. And it's just interesting to see what you find if you make room for that as well, which is what you've done.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
I think a lot, the cells do go wrong. You know, a lot of things do go wrong in the cell. So I can understand that mindset. However, I don't think the problem is we are stuck in that mindset. That's the priority mindset we have, that if something does go wrong with the body, it's because the cell has gone wrong, like you say. If we step out of that mindset, acknowledge that does happen, we then allow ourselves to look at other perspectives that I don't think are being considered. And the main overlooked factor is that we have this massive influence from external forces, essentially. The pathogens, the microbiome that we're now finding is present in many different tissues within the body.
Mm.
And these microorganisms, when they get out of sync, they have massive influence.
As is being shown more and more all the time, is making headline news these days, the effect of these things on our well-being. So while we were preparing for the initial launch of your theory, that took more than a year, I seem to remember, but we went through the exercise of putting the hallmarks of cancer into order, something nobody else seemed to be particularly interested to do. And this then allowed you to see where any one treatment was targeting the process of cancer. Is this only treating late-stage symptoms? Is it affecting the progress of the disease very early on? That was an important way to evaluate the different approaches to treating cancer. Now, what you said about prostate cancer is that it's got the same cause at the beginning, but it's got a different process due to the nature of the prostate. And I'm guessing this means that effective treatments that have a fundamental impact, are going to differ accordingly. And so I just wonder what your thoughts were so far.
Well, for me, it's the nuance is always we've got to target the pathogen. And that would be the primary approach. It's not as easy as saying, oh, here's an antifungal drug, that's it. First of all, you've got to try and identify the pathogens that are present. So you know what type of drug to use, but also you've got various other off-label drugs you can use that are also antifungal. So most of the off-label drugs that are currently being used are antifungal, but you also need to target the metabolism as well. So targeting the metabolism is a key way of actually affecting the pathogen present within the cell, because it's the pathogen that's actually utilizing the glucose or the fat. So for instance, there's a major link between Malassezia fungi in a number of cancers, including breast and prostate cancer and pancreatic cancer. And that's a lipophilic pathogen, fungal pathogen. So it feeds on fat, But then many of the other pathogens, they feed on glucose. So it's understanding that nuance between the different pathogens and trying to identify which one and then what how we can target that. But also understanding, like I say, the metabolism of the cell, because there's no point in utilizing a ketogenic diet in order to restrict glucose in early stage prostate cancer when it's being fed by fat, essentially. And if malassezia are dominant, then that would explain why we have this link with fat to that particular cancer. So at the moment, there isn't any specific protocol because, and even if I was going to try and generate a specific protocol for my theory, which I'm going to be looking at doing, create a foundational protocol, you can. But there's so many nuances involved with each different cancer type and each different person on top of that, given their history, the drugs that they're currently taking, the health status type of, like say, fungal pathogens that are involved. You have synergy with bacteria as well with infections. It's rare that you get a fungal infection on its own. There's biofilms to consider. How do you break down the biofilms? There's the how you modulate the immune system, because I see part of the problem is that the environment within the tumor, you've got excess lactic acid being produced, iron overload. Those two feed pathogens, but they suppress the immune system. You have the pathogen itself is modulating the immune system to a Th2 response rather than a Th1. And then specifically with prostate cancer, if you increase your zinc levels, or if you supplement with high levels of zinc, you have other issues that occur. So what you can have with high levels of zinc is copper deficiency. Now, copper is something that, again, this is something recently I've just come into contact with, because it's not really mentioned very much, but copper is absolutely key for iron metabolism in the body and mitochondrial function, because copper and iron are absolutely key for the process of mitochondria producing energy. Copper forms part of the complexes in the mitochondrial electron transport chain. So if you don't have enough copper regulates the iron in the body, and that then can cause increased inflammation and reduced functioning of mitochondria, which will reduce the defensive mechanisms within the cell, producing a systemic problem where you cannot actually defend against pathogens anywhere near as well as you could do if cells operate efficiently. So it's a myriad of things, and your oncologist, functional medicine practitioners need to be consulted, tests need to be done to establish if you've got mycotoxins in the body, which are also suppressing the immune system. You need to re-stimulate the immune system, and it's working out the best possible way to do that. And it will be different for each individual person.
Yeah, well, that's another whole discussion to be had there, which is going to be ongoing. And one of the places, the foremost places it's happening, in fact, where you launched your new thinking about prostate cancer, was in your Substack. Do you want to just say something about that?
Yeah, I've got a Substack called The Cancer Vigilante. And here I present a lot of my latest research, new ideas, and discuss my theory in plain English, really, just to help inform and hopefully generate more ideas on new aspects of the disease that we don't yet fully understand. And the whole idea is an exploratory approach to further trying to understand the complexes of cancer, but in a way that's accessible to the general public.
Excellent. Okay, great. And do you want to just mention your website? There's a lot more information for people to follow up on.
Yeah, my website is www.cellsuppression.com.
And also just to re-mention that series of interviews I did with Mark some time ago, which goes into his theory in a lot of detail. So, as always, Mark, fantastic speaking to you about your theory. Although I'm not a scientist myself in any way, so much about what you say resonates with me. I'm confident that your ideas are going to increasingly have real-world impact for people with cancer. And in this case, maybe for vast numbers of men. So, listeners, I hope you'll have appreciated from today's chat what a massive achievement we've been discussing today, what a significant moment this is, the first time that any cancer theory has been able to adequately explain the mechanism of the most prevalent cancer in men. Is huge. And It's my privilege to be helping you, Mark, in your mission to bring this information to the attention of those in need. So, yeah, fantastic.
Thank you, Robin. Really appreciate the time and the energy that you bring to this as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Cheers, bye. Bye.
Brilliant, the way that Mark goes about approaching knotty problems by dispensing with all the normal assumptions. In addition to the resources mentioned, Mark also has a Facebook group, which is called Mark Linton's Cancer Theory Discussion Group. So look out for that. Thanks very much for listening. Tune in again next week for more insights into cancer and integrative medicine. In fact, why not make a habit of it if you don't already? I'll be back at the same time next week with the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.